friends, this is Love Will Tear Us Apart, a podcast on your favorite complicated couples. In this episode, I want to explore the relationship of Tina and Ike Turner. In September of 2019, the New York Times had a two-page interview with Tina Turner. If you haven't read it, it's quite the inspiring read. The 80-year-old former rocker and actress lives in Switzerland with her partner of 35 years, German music executive Erwin Bach. Tina hasn't performed in over 10 years, and according to the article, she's loving being retired. And she also loves Coldplay. Who knew? Even though she's no longer in the spotlight, her persona still shines. Tina, the Tina Turner musical, recently played on Broadway to rave reviews. She's also written three autobiographies, I, Tina, in 1986, I, Tina, My Life Story in 2010, and My Love Story in 2018, and I read two of them for this podcast. I also read Ike Turner's autobiography, Taking Back My Name, because I wanted to get both sides of their story. Let me say this. This episode was remarkably difficult to research. In fact, this was the most challenging episode I've written so far. The amount of abuse Tina and other women suffered at the hands of Ike is jaw-dropping. It's pretty common knowledge amongst music listeners that Ike was bad, but I'll be honest, I didn't know the full extent. Not only that, Ike too suffered from abuse as a small child. With that being said, this entire episode is one giant trigger warning. In it, I discuss physical, emotional, and sexual abuse, pedophilia, abortion, and a suicide attempt. Anna Mae Bullock was born in Brownsville, Tennessee in 1939 and grew up in the nearby rural town of Nutbush. Her childhood was a sad one. Her parents fought frequently, and she was sent to various relatives off and on for most of her youth. In her first autobiography, I, Tina, Anna Mae says this about her childhood: "I wasn't interested at all in grown-ups and whatever they were doing. And that was because, mainly, they weren't interested in me. The fact is, I had no love for my mother or father from the beginning, from birth. But I survived. To tell you the truth, I haven't received a real love almost ever in my life, believe it or not." Side note, this book was written before she met her husband, Erwin Bach, so I imagine she feels differently about that now. While Anna Mae says that her family wasn't as poor as other families in the neighborhood, she was forced to pick cotton, something she speaks about with disdain. At a young age, Tina was a creative and independent child, and she showed a talent and interest in singing. She honed her singing skills at the local Baptist church. At the age of 16, her mother Zelma, who had abandoned her when she was 11, asked Anna Mae to come live with her in East St. Louis. It is here, in East St. Louis, that young Anna Mae Bullock would soon meet Izear Turner. 8 years before Anna Mae's birth, roughly 136 miles away in the segregated Clarksdale, Mississippi, Izear Luster Turner Jr. was born. In his autobiography, and in Tina's autobiography, it is said that Ike's pastor father, Izear Sr., was beaten by several white men for fooling around with one of their girlfriends. His father lived in a medical tent in the front yard for several years before dying, and Ike writes that he could sometimes smell his dad's wounds when the wind was just right. There's a note on Ike's Wikipedia page that blues historian Ted Drozdowski says that Ike's father actually died in an industrial accident. But in the Gibson Guitar article where this info is sourced, Drozdowski doesn't add any context. I was unable to verify what Drozdowski said, And since both Ike and Tina said that Ike's dad died at the hands of a white mob, and the New York Times also printed this in Ike's obituary, I will assume that he was indeed beaten and succumbed to his injuries. Ike was close to his mother and his niece, who was only 2 years younger than he was. He credits his mother for instilling a strong work ethic, and he spent a lot of his childhood doing odd jobs for money. Okay, trigger warning here. Ike was raped and molested as a young boy. In his autobiography, he said that two different women in the neighborhood forced him to have sex with them between the ages of 6 and 12. He, in turn, began having sex with his babysitter, who was only 9. In his autobiography, Ike says, "Today they call this stuff child molesting. Well, man, there was no such thing back then." The nonchalant way he talked about his abuse is alarming. Ike doesn't frame the abuse in a negative light at all. In fact, he writes about it almost fondly and with pride, something he did in interviews as well. I think it's a good indicator of some of the deeply rooted trauma Ike may have suffered from. Ike was interested in boogie-woogie from a young age, and he began learning how to play music from Delta blues musicians. In his teenage years, he taught himself several instruments, and he became a radio DJ. It was also when he was a teenager, only 15 or 16, he's not really sure, that Ike married for the first of possibly 14 times. By his late teens, Ike was leading the increasingly popular The Kings of Rhythm, who sometimes played with B.B. King and was invited to record at Sam Phillips' Sun Studios in Memphis. They recorded Rocket 88 in 1951, which is oftentimes considered the first rock and roll song, though Ike Turner is uncredited for co-creating this song. For the next few years, Ike was a studio musician at Sun Studios before heading to East St. Louis. There, he and the Kings of Rhythm would become a popular local favorite, packing the house with black and white music lovers and lots of adoring female fans. It was one fateful night in 1957 at a gig at the Manhattan Club that Ike and Anna Mae would meet. When Anna Mae Bullock met Ike Turner, she was around 18 and he was around 26. Her sister was a fan of the Kings of Rhythm and brought Anna Mae, who was working as a nurse's aide at the time, along to their shows. In her autobiography, Anna Mae said those bars weren't really her scene, but she could feel the energy in the room, particularly when Ike came on stage. But it wasn't love at first sight, like the biopic What's Love Got to Do with It makes it look like. "When he got closer," Anna Mae said, "I thought, God, he's ugly. But there was something about him." As soon as he started playing, Anna Mae said she went into a trance. The two wouldn't officially meet until the night Anna Mae sang for the Kings of Rhythm. Because the band played long sessions, they'd often let audience members come up and sing. Most of these audience members were average at best. But Anna Mae knew she had a voice, so she asked her sister to keep bugging the band about letting her sing. Months went by before Anna Mae finally got the mic in her hands, and her voice impressed everyone, even the hypercritical Ike. Ike said, "One night I was just messing around on the piano, and the drummer took the mic out of my stand. It had a long cord on it, and he reached down to this table at the front and gave it to this girl. All at once I heard this singing. 'Damn,' I said, 'that girl can sing.'" Anna Mae says about that night, "He stopped playing the organ and he ran down off the stage and he picked me right up." Anna Mae was hooked. The attention from the band and the crowd and the ability to finally share her voice with the world made her feel like a star. Ike was so impressed, he invited her to join the Kings of Rhythm. She agreed, but as soon as her mother found out, Anna Mae was in big trouble. Anna Mae said, She hit me a backhand lick to the side of my face, and when I saw it had given me a nosebleed, I nearly hit her back. She said, "So you've been singing with Ike Turner, huh?" Her mother quickly put the kibosh on her teenage daughter singing with such a notorious womanizer and pistol carrier. But Ike paid Selma a visit and charmed her over. Soon, Anna Mae would become a full-time singer. In those early days, neither Anna Mae nor Ike had interest in one another. At only 31 years of age, Ike was on wife number 7, Lorraine Taylor, whom he had 2 sons with, Ike Jr. and Michael. And Anna Mae was with the Kings of Rhythm saxophonist Raymond Hill. While she was a senior in high school, Anna Mae became pregnant with Hill's baby, and the 2 moved into Ike's house, which had become a commune of sorts for his band members and their girlfriends or wives. The timeline of what happens next diverges in both of their autobiographies. In Anna Mae's story, Hill has left her while she was living at the Turner household. Ike's wife, Lorraine, became suspicious of Tina's pregnancy and thought it was Ike's baby. One night, in a deep rage, Lorraine woke up Anna Mae with a loaded gun and hot iron pointed in her direction. Anna Mae asked Lorraine what was wrong, and Lorraine demanded to know if something was happening between her and her husband. Anna Mae told her no. Lorraine demanded to know the truth, but Anna Mae doubled down. "Bitch, you're not worth it anyway," Lorraine said. Then Lorraine walked into the bathroom and shot herself in the chest. She survived, and Anna Mae soon gave birth to her child with Hill. In Ike's biography, he believed he had already had sex with Anna Mae when Lorraine tried to shoot her, but the fact is he hadn't. This event happened in 1958, and Ike and Anna Mae didn't consummate their relationship until 1959 or 1960. Both Ike and Anna Mae look back on the night they consummated their relationship with distaste. Both describe the other as being like a sibling, so doing the dirty deed felt icky to both of them, even though Ike was the one to initiate it. He said, "The first time I went with her, I felt like I'd screwed my sister or something." Anna Mae adds, "I had never thought of having sex with him. I thought, God, this is horrible. I can't do this." But this would be the beginning of 18 very long, very turbulent years together, with extreme highs and extreme lows. Anna Mae quickly became pregnant by Ike, just as their musical career was taking off. Though they were not married, Ike changed Anna Mae's name to Tina Turner and the band's name to the Ike and Tina Turner Review, which included the all-female backup singers, the Ikettes. Ike even trademarked Tina's name. This, Tina says, was one of Ike's many manipulative ways to ensure she would never leave him. He said the reason why he trademarked her name was because he was afraid Tina would go back to her son's father and he would have to replace her with a lookalike. The abuse started pretty quickly. While Tina was pregnant with their one and only child, Ike wanted to begin a grueling tour. Tina expressed that she wasn't up to it, that she didn't want to change her name to Tina, and that she didn't want him controlling her life. According to Tina, Ike responded by belittling her and then beating her with a shoe stretcher. "Ike knew exactly what he was doing," Tina said. "If you play guitar, your hands are your most valuable asset, so you never use your fists in a fight." While Tina doesn't use the word rape when sharing this story, Ike raped her while her head was swelling from the beatings. It is then that Tina knew she was in trouble, but with a baby on the way, a burgeoning career, and her abuser being both her manager and the father of her unborn child, she didn't know what to do. "Why didn't I leave him?" she said. "It's easy to say now I should have. But look at my situation then. I already have one child, and I was pregnant with another by him. Singing with Ike was how I made my living, and I was living better than I ever had in my life. I really did care about him, and I knew the story of how he had tried to get his career going for so long, and how every time he'd get a foothold, people would walk out on him. And I swore I would not do that to him. So I said to myself, I'll stay right here and I'll just try to make things better." Tina's pregnancy was tumultuous. Ike subjected her, himself, and the band to a grueling tour. He went back to his wife, Lorraine. Tina almost died from hepatitis, and they got a radio hit with "A Fool in Love." Ike wasn't about to let Tina's sickness get in the way of their newfound fortune. While she was convalescing in the hospital from hepatitis, he pulled her out and brought her on tour. The pregnant and very sick Tina persevered, and she sang and danced all the way up to giving birth to their son, Ronnie, on October 27, 1960. And because Ike needed her back on the road again, she only had 2 days to recuperate. "I bled a lot when I hit those high notes," she said. Okay, if Ike's abuse sounds over the top, that's because it is. As I began researching their story, I realized that abuse was going to be a large part of it, and I wanted to make sure I did as much research as possible to accurately tell their story. I also wanted to hear both sides of their story. This is the conclusion I came to. Ike has admitted to abusing Tina, though he denies at the level she claims she was abused. And seeing that Ike was prone to hyperbole and getting his facts oftentimes wrong, I would say he's an unreliable narrator. Tina, on the other hand, is consistent in her storytelling, and many, many people in their inner circle have gone on record saying they saw Ike hit Tina or saw her bruises and cuts. Ann Kane, one of Ike's girlfriends and his business manager, said she saw Ike stick a lit cigarette up Tina's nose and saw the aftermath of a beating in the dressing room. In addition, several women in their orbit went on record saying Ike abused them too. So let's stop there for now. This is a two-parter. In next week's episode, we will continue the story of Ike and Tina Turner, which gets even more insane than what I've already told you. I just want to say that if you or anyone you know is experiencing abuse, please call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-SAFE. This episode was researched, written, and read by me, Lauren Modry. The music is by Mike G, who also produced this episode. And I'd like to thank Jonathan Luna and Jeff Marslett.